I think the policies that are part of crop insurance run counter to ecological resilience. And the economics that are imposed by crop insurance encourage producers, ourselves included, to do things that we would not do if there were not crop insurance.
In this episode of Voices from the Field, Montana organic farmer Doug Crabtree of Villicus Farms and InCat agriculture and natural resource economist Jeff Szczesinski talk about one of their favorite topics, crop insurance. They discuss the hope for reform of whole farm revenue protection and about the particular challenges of crop insurance for large, highly diverse, sustainable production systems like Villicus Farms. Doug has used whole farm revenue protection for many years, and it had the potential to provide protection for Doug's 20-plus field crops grown on almost 12,000 acres. But his policy was declined by his crop insurance company because he didn't provide what he says is an onerous amount of documentation. Let's listen.
So just guess background, like when did you start farming? Maybe like why did you start farming? Where are you farming and why are you farming the way you farm?
Oh, wow. Yeah, 2009, we bought the first farm that's part of the current operation. Mm-hmm. And we are in North Central Hill County, Montana.
And why did you pick Hill County when you decided to farm again? Just curious.
Yeah, there was a block of land for sale that we thought we could afford and make a living in farming. Okay. Eventually. We're still trying to prove that.
Just trying to prove that. I know. And you were organic from the start, correct? It was never a question of any alternative.
Yeah, I don't see the viability, nor do I, does not fit my ethics to grow food using poison.
Okay. And from the very beginning, now let's turn to crop insurance. From the very beginning, you took crop insurance from the very beginning, and do you find it a necessity that you have to, and maybe a little bit background on crop insurance.
Yeah, good question. Yeah, I think it's an economic necessity, sort of a necessary evil, you might say. If it were not available, I would like my chances the way we farm, but because it is, you have to use it to be competitive. And we've always carried it, probably initially at least, because we were required to by, we've held FSA loans and private lender loans and farm credit loans, and anybody that loans you money either highly recommends or demands that you carry crop insurance.
Yeah. So you're kind of stuck with it no matter what you think of your own resiliency in terms of potential for not necessarily. When you say you would take your chances at using it, I mean, looking back on what you experienced, would you say though that without crop insurance, I mean, if you had taken that chance, would you still be in business today?
Oh, that's a good question, Jeff. I like to think so, but I guess when I say do without it, the entire system would have to change.
Right.
If it was not available to anybody, I like the competitiveness of our system better than others.
So you'd be as viable or more than the neighbors who aren't farming the way you think is more resilient and therefore less risky potentially.
Yes, I think the policies that are part of crop insurance run counter to ecological resilience. And the economics that are imposed by crop insurance encourage producers, ourselves included, to do things that we would not do if there were not crop insurance.
So you actually think it induces poor farming behavior?
I think it induces much riskier farming behavior.
Because you don't have to worry because you will be covered. So you can take chances.
I think in particular, it discourages diversity and encourages monoculture.
Yeah.
And in our region, it strongly encourages what I think is the worst possible agronomic and economic and environmental practice, and that is fallow.
Mm. Particularly summer fallow, the way it is in Montana, which I'm just saying that, Doug, because I know that when I've been around the country and the world, even, you know, the the concept of summer fallow, as it's practiced here in Montana in the semi-arid northern Great Plains, is not really understood by a lot of people.
And if you talk to agronomists anywhere else in the world, they can't fathom that that would even be a consideration.
Right.
At least most of the ones I've talked to. It takes a while to explain it.
Right.
Because it's such an alien concept for anyone that, you know, that's knows true. Anything about or espouses the benefits of soil health.
Correct. So as an organic farmer and taking out crop insurance, you know, since 2009, did you find that extra to be an extra burden? Maybe initially, has it gotten better? What maybe are still some of the issues because you're a certified organic farmer that sure. that may make it harder for you or not?
Yeah, I think we're definitely disadvantaged. It has gotten better, and it's hard for me to say it's because we're organic or it's because we're diverse. It's sort of, to me, in order to be organic, you have to be diverse, or at least to some extent. And because it's more difficult to purchase and utilize crop insurance when you have more diverse crops, it's hard for me to separate that from being organic. But there are things like the arbitrary determination of yields for organic. You know, if you do not, or until you do have your own history, the assumption is 65% of the county average or T yield. I think that's an extreme bias, anti-organic bias.
Yeah.
The whole policy around fallow, which from my understanding or my interpretation is not a practice that's even allowed in organic, but that is almost demanded by crop insurance. That's a huge discrimination.
Yeah. Did you run into a problem? I mean, the one, you know, we've talked about this over the years, but with this whole cover crop and termination issue, I mean, yeah.
It's a joke.
Has that actually caused you a problem though, in terms of your insurance?
Yes. We are forced to insure many of our crops as continuous crop, even though in my view, there was not a crop prior to that crop. So the definitions used in crop insurance discriminate against anyone that does not fallow, and certainly against organic systems where green manure crops are required and necessary agronomically.
Yeah. No, I think that's an issue that I know myself has experienced in watching the policy develop. Is there doesn't even seem to be a full understanding by, and I think this is broadly in USDA, that cover crops are actually used for fertility management as well as erosion and other issues, particularly the fertility management part of it. It's actually a fact that the current definition of cover crops under NRCS does not even recognize it as fertility. And I could explain that, but I mean, yeah, so no, that's partly the point.
I'm familiar. It's a huge knowledge gap.
Yeah. And so again, back to this organic, it hasn't been an issue ever with, did you feel like you either had to pay more, your claims weren't adjusted properly when you did get, I mean, have you made lots of claims over the years and have you been more or less gone through that process in a reasonable way?
Sure. Yeah, no. I mean, unfortunately, we've had a number of claims, including each of the past 3 years.
Yeah.
My memory is a little vague before that, but definitely each of the past 3 years. I don't have any complaints about the adjustment process, I guess. I think they're professional and handle that well. To me, it's the underlying policies that are discriminatory and not well considered. You know, whether we're talking about cover crops or fallow or, you know, system assumptions, or, you know, all the things we've already talked about, you know, it's not the people doing it that are the problem. It are the rules under which we and they have to operate.
Would, without subsidized crop insurance, would you think your farm would be financially viable today or continue to be financially viable today?
Well, let's kind of get back to this.
Yeah, same question.
I tried to make before, and that is, if it was taken away from everyone, this is the kind of system, I would argue, the only kind of system that would work.
I see.
Low input, diverse, low, you know, kind of the old LISA, low input sustainable agriculture.
That's yeah.
what we're doing. Crop insurance supports high input systems. It's right. by its very design. So, you know, if you take it away from us and or systems like ours and not the others, then absolutely not. This won't work. If you leave it in as it is now, we can't afford to not have it and compete with anyone else who does. You know, I call it the biggest perversion in agriculture.
Whoa. Now we're going to turn end up with the issue that I know that you and I have worked on a long time, both from a policy point of view and in reality, is whole farm revenue protection. Have you? I know you've used it over the years, and I know you haven't had to make, well, I don't know if you had or have or not made a claim, but has it been used for you? And I, again, one more time, what were the challenges and why did you do it? Why did you use it? Sure. And then, and what benefit has it been to you?
Well, I have been, I still am an advocate for the concept of whole farm revenue protection. That is a policy or a product that supports the revenue of an entire farm, regardless of what or how many crops or livestock or enterprises that are employed, and kind of decoupling that decision from the type of coverage available would go a long way to making agriculture more sustainable. I also believe in principle, it should be a much simpler approach. Mm-hmm. Take your average income from the last 5 years, buy a certain percentage of that in revenue insurance. And yeah, it sounds wonderful and could be, but unfortunately it has been every year we had it, and we had it, I believe, for 5 years, maybe six. The documentation and the demands there for documentation grew more onerous each year. And it's asking questions like, you know, as if they were implementing multi-peril policies, things like, was this summer fallow or not the previous year? And I do not understand yet why that has any bearing on a whole farm revenue program. But so there are many details of the implementation that are or were challenging. But at the end of the day, there is a fatal flaw. And I've talked about this with you many times, yeah. but I'll try to explain it succinctly.
Okay.
That when your average revenue is used to compute your insurable revenue, the average of 5 years gross income from a Schedule F, and there are a few deductions from that, but the one that is absolutely unreasonable is any insurance indemnity that was part of your revenue in any of those 5 years is deducted from the revenue that you can subsequently insure. You know, as long as that is done, you're never going to be, you know, in a climate like ours, where the insurance and collection of insurance is going to be part of normal agricultural production. If you take that out of a farm's average revenue, you're simply not insuring a high enough portion of your revenue for the product to be viable. So that is half of the flaw. The second half, which is, I call it double jeopardy. If you submit a claim and you also have a claim under any other in crop insurance policy, the indemnity collected from the other insurance is deducted from what would otherwise be the payout or the indemnity of whole farm.
Got it.
So what happens is at the front end, you reduce the proportion of your revenue that can be insured. And then on top of that, at the back end, you deduct any collection from other insurance. And for us, that meant we could insure 40 to 50% of our revenue when we're buying 80%. And then when we tried to file a claim, we were never able to collect a claim because we had other policies for specific crops. Mm-hmm. And the indemnity collected for the, in our case, wheat and flax was sufficiently large to exceed the guarantee under whole farm.
Yes.
Finally, it took me a while, a number of years to get it through my head, but practically and mathematically impossible for us to collect on a whole farm policy if we are carrying multi-parallel on any significant portion of our acreage in individual crop policies.
Yeah. NCAT's Soil for Water connects you with farmers, ranchers, and land managers who are discovering practical ways to catch and hold more water in their soils. Find their stories of success, practical tips for soil health, and more at soilforwater.org.
You recently had, I mean, that's the reason I motivated it somewhat to have this discussion, is that you've had rather what I call a debacle with whole farm revenue. And again, you keep saying the documentation increased year after year, but this last year you apparently did the same thing you always did, but you were declined. And do you still understand? Do you understand? I mean, I know you've been busy with planting and everything else, and it's not the best time of the year when you have to get these policies bought and everything. But can you kind of explain what happened? Do you know what happened and why it happened? Why you were declined?
Yeah, I think I'd have to go review the letter to be certain. Right. But my sort of layman's explanation is, we did not submit adequate documentation to meet the requirement to prove the yields we were projecting for all of the crops we wanted to insure. In our case, you know, we had a couple crops this year we had not grown before. Mm-hmm. So I'm still not sure what that documentation would be, but they wanted more. And to be frank, I had already determined that I'd be better off without it.
Oh,
so it's very hard.
You didn't work that hard to do it. Yeah. So, I mean, there isn't, it's interesting you say that too, because in a way, it doesn't really matter. Because as you know, the whole farm revenue, the revenue guarantee is based on the lower of either your historic average, you know, with the deductions, or your expected revenue. Yeah, and so if you're spending all this time collecting energy, you know, information about your expectations, it really comes to naught anyway, because the guarantee is kind of irrelevant to that, because it's likely that you are going to take the lower will be your historic rather than your current year. I mean, it does occasionally occur, I think, that a farm may in fact produce or predict that they produce less revenue than the year before. It probably does happen, but it probably happens very infrequently. And so it really, it seems like you have this burden for paperwork for paperwork that doesn't even really go into the determination of the guarantee. Did you find that to be true?
Absolutely. It just became, as I say, there was more demand for documentation every year, even though we had submitted it. You know, it's like what we submitted the year before wasn't good enough. We'd have to go back and submit more documentation for what was already insured.
And you never got from your agent or from the AI, the accredited, the approved insurance provider, the ultimate company, you never got like what you would consider an explanation as to why there was the need for more. Did they say they had to collect this? Did they say you can't buy it if you don't give us this information? Did they like warn you all these things?
And everybody blames someone else.
I see.
So the agent blames the company, and the company representative blames RMA. And if you ever get to talk to people at RMA, they claim it's the insurance companies. And right. So it becomes a circular thing. And, you know, everyone that I have worked with, and there have been a number, have been very understanding and, you know, compassionate and whatever. But at the end of the day, they've just made it needlessly complicated. And frankly, most of the company and agent folks don't have much incentive to make it saleable. Well,
the reality is, and I've worked on this, as you know, many years, if you read the handbook, which is only 150 some plus pages, and it actually is, it is an option for the approved insurance provider, the companies that ultimately are sold through local agents. It's an option for them to collect information. It isn't mandatory. And it's really only it's an option if they have basically, in a way, some kind of reason, you know, for why they need the extra information. That's the way the handbook reads. Mm-hmm. But it seems that the, and it's somewhere between RMA and the insurance providers, where I don't know if there's confusion or just, I don't know if it's in intentional intent or whatever, but they don't have to do this. Mm-hmm. And you as a buyer of this insurance should be able to, according to the way it's written, the language is very legalese, but it basically, they should be informing you as to why they need the extra information. They can't just ask for information for no reason. There's no government mandate that says they must collect this information. That's the point. It isn't clear that that's true. Now, they might want to, because they want to be sure they're, it's called their underwriting gains, and they want to be sure that they don't do something wrong so that they make a mistake. And supposedly, if they collect this more information, that you're going to make less of a mistake. I think that's maybe some of the reason. I suppose there's fear of fraud, although I've never heard anyone at RMA or even insurance companies ever claim that a whole farm revenue protection policy was any more likely to be fraudulent than any other, or that there isn't even any case for a large amount of fraud within the whole farm revenue program, much less crop insurance in general. So it's a very bizarre thing to me. It, like you say, the circular, everybody's blaming the other person, but you actually carefully read the documentation. It's not a really a mandatory thing that they do so, but they do are given the option to do so by RMA. And so most of them do take the option, and even though it's not required, but you as a buyer, and because it's federally subsidized and yours and ours, taxpayer dollars, pay for a lot of this insurance, have the right to be informed as to why. And I've always told people to ask why. Have you ever asked them, why do you need this information? And have they given you an answer? Or did they just say, that's the way it has to be? That was a long way around to a question.
The short answer is yes, I have asked. And you know, the agent that I've worked with always says, you know, that's what the company representatives are telling them. That's what the forms they've been given require. And then if you climb up that ladder and talk to, I don't know what people's titles are, but, you know, higher up people in the background that administer the programs, they always, to a person, they will state that it is a requirement of RMA, that we have all of this information and all of this documentation. Always RMA's fault.
I see.
And yeah, they will say that in a sympathetic way, as if, you know, we're on the same side against this government mandate being imposed upon us all. And then when you talk to people at RMA, generally, they use the same tones and phrases and say it is the company that is covering their own liability. Right. And they have a right to do that, but it's too bad that they make it so onerous for you, the applicant, right, and producer.
So who's on first? Yeah.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, this is absolutely supposition on my part, but I don't believe RMA understands that this is a policy or has any intention of it being a policy for farms like ours. Their goal is to make this a policy for small fruit and vegetable farms that otherwise won't buy insurance. And there seems to be an absolute desire to sell, to create crop insurance for every possible agricultural producer, and right, cannot conceive that anyone would not want to have a crop insurance.
Right.
So they want whole farm to be the thing that brings small scale fruit and vegetable growers into the fold. I mean, I have friends and relatives, and they have no need for crop insurance.
Right.
Either because it's such a small portion of their actual income, or the risk is already mitigated by the marketing system,
by their diversity itself in many cases.
Yes. And whenever I've talked to anyone at RMA about whole farm revenue, they are always referencing, well, this is for the small, diverse growers. And I say, what about large, diverse growers? And then I have to explain what that means and and what a unicorn I am.
I see.
That's one problem. And then the companies and the agents just can't conceive why anyone would want to put themselves through the effort.
Right.
They're not wrong, because you know, multi-peril insurance is so good. at least for the predominant crops in our right. region.
And it's certainly for them as providers of this and servicing it, much simpler to write a single policy for a single crop than it is for a whole farm.
Yeah, I mean, that's even easier to write single policies for 5 or 6 crops.
Exactly. Because they
I'm
don't
not
have
sure about 27. I'm gonna find that out next year.
But... You'll find that out. Well, there won't be insurance policies for all 27. There might be there's more and more every year, it's true, but there won't be for all 27. You can try. I guess I could how would you generally improve whole farm and the crop and show program generally for you as an organic farmer? What would you, if the world was your oyster and you could have what you wanted, what would you do?
Well, I would remove both of those. What do I want to call it? I call it the double jeopardy of whole farm revenue protection.
Right.
I would absolutely allow any and all insurance indemnities to be counted as part of your insurable revenue. And if you're buying multiple policies, you should not have to deduct what you collect on one from the other.
Got it.
So that would make, that alone would make whole farm a viable product for us. Mm-hmm. And I could put up with everything else if you made it viable by doing away with those two things.
Okay.
And then, you know, on a larger thing about crop insurance, we should absolutely eliminate any discussion of or distinction between summer fallow and continuous crop practice. Mm-hmm. We should eliminate any and all termination dates for cover crops. All of that should be left up to the management of the producer. And actually, we should be, I don't believe you should be able to insure any crop if you practice summer fallow. Mm. That should be a prohibited practice if we are serious about building soil and combating climate change. It should, you know, having bare soil, whatever way you achieve that, should never be permitted. Therefore, it should not be insurable. We should absolutely not offer insurance to anyone who grows less than 3 crops, you know, annual crops in their system, because monoculture is not a defendable practice in this era. I don't think it ever has been, but certainly not in this era. So, you know, rather than being penalized for diversity, you should be required to demonstrate diversity.
And likely, like in whole farm, the risk is likely to be less, and therefore the cost to you and to the public should be less. That's even a really good public outcome.
I would just turn on their head, right?
Right. You know,
what happens now is we encourage monoculture, we encourage fallow, we discourage cover cropping. We should turn all those things around.
Well, Doug, so, I think
that's a good start, right?
That's a good start. Yeah. All right, Doug, I'll let you go back to work and do all your fun things that you have to do that aren't farming. All right.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Thanks a lot.
Look forward to next time.
Hey, we'll see you. We'll see you soon.
That's it for this episode. Thanks for listening. Additional information about this episode and related resources can be found at atra.incat.org. Don't miss an episode. Subscribe to Voices from the Field wherever you get your podcasts. I'm your host, Rich Myers. ATRA, Voices from the Field, is produced by the National Center for Appropriate Technology, headquartered in Butte, Montana. It's supported by the USDA Rural Business Cooperative Service as part of NCAT's ATRA Sustainable Agriculture Program. Any opinions, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this recording are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDA or NCAT. We'll catch you again next week, and until then, keep on farming.